Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Got two great guests in studio today. I love it when these guys are here. Second hour, Carlo Broussard will be here. And this hour, we've got Trent Horn, and we're going to do tips for defending the faith this hour. If you have questions about defending the faith, maybe somebody has said to you, you know, they've given you a really hard problem about the faith. Like, I don't know, Jesus said, call no man father, but you Catholics call priests father, that kind of thing. Or, you know, maybe something really, really hard, like the universe invented itself. Physicists have proven this, and, you know, and you have some famous physicist saying that, and then so you say people don't believe in God because of this. Whatever. You got some aspect of the faith that you need help defending. We have one of the great defenders of the faith here to help you. The number is 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884 to speak with Trent Horn, who is, as you know, an author extraordinaire. He wrote a book called Persuasive Pro-Life. He wrote another one called Answering Atheism. He wrote one called Why We're Catholics. And he wrote What the Saints Never Said. That's Hello, correct. Trent.
Hello, Cy. And my most recent book, co-authored with Catherine Pakolik, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? The answer is no. Here's why. It is the only book so far in my repertoire that I feel compelled to say the subtitle along with the title whenever I talk about it.
Yeah, I see. Well, yeah, yeah. Because actually, there's probably a lot of people who would either A, not know what the church has said about this, or B, not be entirely convinced.
Right. So that's why I wrote the book. And actually, I'm planning on June 11th to take part in a live debate. It'll be hosted on YouTube Live on our Catholic Answers YouTube channel, which a little birdie told me earlier. Well, you told me earlier. We're almost at 100,000 subscribers, right?
Yes, we are. And that's it's going to be an exciting day here today because we feel like, you know, this is big news. If we make it to 100,000, we're in the top. You know that our YouTube channel is in the top 4%. Of subscribers around the world.
Really? For YouTube channels?
For YouTube channels. We're in the top 4%. But we have not yet gone over 100,000. But and this is why we have a little bit of an audience here today from the video department, because it's their work that they do that. And Thomas does the social media. Going over 100,000 is a big deal.
So
that's not 100,000 viewers or something like that.
We've 100,000 subscribers.
17.2 million views. But we're 100,000 subscribers.
So are you telling me that 4% of the channels on YouTube have like 90% of the views? Are we part of this massive inequality on YouTube? Are we part? You want to be part of the 4%?
That's what we are. Yeah, we're 4%ers.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so you want the rest of the 96% to support us to be in the 4%?
I think you're possibly creating a social resentment here that I find unappealing.
Well, what I just think is we just shouldn't have any classes at all. Like, we shouldn't have channels. We shouldn't have, you know, differences between anything, Cy, because we all have to have one level of equality. In fact, Pope Leo XIII said that we should bring society down to one dead level. Oh, I'm sorry. Pope Leo XIII said that socialists are wrong because they bring society down to one dead level. So if you want more on that, check out my book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? But it will definitely not be that if you go and support our YouTube channel, where we will be broadcasting the debate, other fun talks.
It's going to be exciting news. We're going to share it with you. They'll be cheering here in the studio when we cross the 100,000 plateau. Now, I know it's been a week of disappointments in many ways. Earlier, Virgin Space tried to shoot a rocket into space. They couldn't do it. They missed. They shot at space and they missed.
They missed?
Yeah, they missed.
It's right in front of them.
I know. And then today we had the first men in space from the United States since, I don't know, 2012 or something. They couldn't go because they had a tornado.
But wait, I thought the motto of NASA was neither sleet nor hail nor snow will keep me from going into space. Isn't that what they say?
No, you are completely wrong. That is the motto of the Postal Service.
No.
Their space delivery program.
No,
something like
the
that.
The Postal Service is through adversity to the stars. And NASA is
come on,
neither sleet nor snow will keep the space shuttle from sending you mail.
All I'm saying is we're on the Earth here. We shot at space and missed one time this week.
Yes.
And then we were supposed to send people to space on top of a rocket ship for the first time in almost a decade. Mm. And that didn't get to go off. So we need something to celebrate as a country, as a nation, as a world. Mm-hmm. So we're going to celebrate going over 100,000 subscribers on YouTube today. If you're watching us on YouTube, just hit the subscribe button and you will become a subscriber. Or is it the little bell? Is that what you hit, the little bell? What do you hit to become a subscriber? Oh, that's to get notifications is the little bell. Just hit the subscribe button and you'll be a subscriber, and then we're going to share that. 888-318-7884 is our number. Tips for defending the faith today. Thus far, nothing that Trent Horn has said has been true, but he's much better when he talks about the Catholic faith, sleet or snow.
I have to get it all out of my system, the inaccuracies.
Yeah, you get them all out first, and then you can go. Are you ready to take some calls?
Yeah, that would be fun.
Let's go to Mary Beth in Wisconsin. Mary Beth, thanks for joining us. Your question for Trent Horn.
Yes, I got to plug you in here. My question is, I have a teenage adopted daughter. She is 15 years old. I have been raising her as a Catholic as I am since she's been little. She's gone through communion. But at age 15, she's doing a considerable amount of questioning faith, God, no objectivity, and it presents an added dilemma because I myself, through some of my own life experiences, and even...
All right, well, we had a little trouble, but I think we got enough. She has a daughter who doesn't believe in God. And so we're heading toward, we're just having trouble with the phone. So I'm not trying to get rid of you or anything. We'll come back.
No, yeah. Well, Mary Beth, we'll try to get a stronger connection to you because I think that that'll help me give a more complete answer. What I find is it's very common for teenagers to question lots of things in life. They want to assert their own identity and they don't want to just be told, believe this because I said so, or believe this because we've always believed this. They really strive, especially for authenticity. I mean, teens today, I mean, all teenagers have dealt with this, and especially in the past few generations, they have to become experts at detecting when people are being inauthentic with them. And if you think about it, Cy, every generation is the most sold to generation on earth. If you think about it, like young people, they go online and they get ads after ads after ads. You know, every time you watch a YouTube channel, something is trying to be sold to you. So you have to develop a detector to see, like, is this worth my time or not? So it's a very heightened detector. And teenagers especially will hear that when it comes to religion. So if it's just, well, you believe this because I say so, it's like, well, that's not really good enough. So I find it's helpful, Mary Beth, that you ask questions and have more of a dialogue. So first, just trying to see what the reasons are. Like, why doesn't your daughter believe in God? Is it just, well, I've never seen any good reasons to believe in God? Now, I can understand where you and other parents who are listening could be coming from, where you may feel in over your head thinking, how am I supposed to prove God exists to my teenager? You know, it's kind of complicated, isn't it? And it can be. Here's some tips that I would give if you're in this situation. Like I said, ask questions and get your teenager, or maybe it could be, if you're listening, maybe you have a friend or a relative, whoever it may be, even if you don't know a lot about proving that God exists, you can ask some simple questions to make the conversation go well. So first you can ask them, okay, well, what's the best reason you've ever heard for believing in God, and what's wrong with it? Like, you could ask them, why do people think that God exists? Like, why do people believe in God? Those reasons don't persuade you, obviously. Why don't they persuade you? And then maybe you'll discover that that person has never really encountered a very good reason to believe in God. Just reasons like, well, the Bible says so, or, you know, how did we all get here? Very simplistic reasons. And you can offer better reasons, which we have available in like my book, like Answering Atheism or Why We're Catholic. So that's one route that I would take. Is just to ask those kinds of questions. Another question, I might say, well, would you be open-minded on this subject? And I find, especially with teenagers and others who question the existence of God, it's nice for them to see both sides. So maybe you might not want to give them a book, like my book, Why We're Catholic, even though I think it was written for people who aren't Catholic. You might be able to give them, I find debates are helpful, like a debate between an atheist and a Christian, debates involving William Lane Craig, or myself, for example. Those are great resources to let people watch and just kind of make up their own mind and follow the arguments. So those are two approaches that I might take in these situations with teenagers. Ask questions, get them to try to articulate why they don't believe and what evidence is not persuasive, and then show the evidence to them. And sometimes in a debate, they might see that's the most fair way for them to evaluate the evidence because they get to see both sides in real time. So I hope this is helpful, Mary Beth. I'm sorry we lost your call, but hopefully you can call back in and we get a stronger signal and to talk more at length in the future.
Tips for defending the faith this hour with Trent Horn, 888-318-7884, the number. We're waiting. We're holding our breath for when Nick or Francesca gives us the signal that we have crossed the 100,000 subscriptions mark on YouTube. We're already in the top 1,000 on the planet Earth, top 1,000 on the planet Earth of nonprofits for their YouTube channel. So it's going very, very well. And we go ahead over there and subscribe. And we're a little more than 100 now, right? We're a little more than 100 away. We need about that. If we can get that in this program, we will cross the 100,000 mark today. 888-318-7884. Right back with more with Trent Horn giving tips on defending the faith.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Prayer is a variety of forms of communication. Sometimes we simply greet one another, hi, how are you? And we say small, short prayers similarly to God. Other times we engage people in deep conversations. Other times we engage our families in family reunions and big meals. Similarly with God, we engage Him in Eucharist and deep meditation as well.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've still got a bunch of digital deals that were kind of related to the fact that people weren't getting out and going to where they usually buy books and things. And so we thought we'd make a bunch of stuff available to you at great prices digitally. People have taken advantage of those all around the world, which is another nice thing. Like a woman just the other day sent an email saying, it's really hard to get your stuff here in New Zealand. How can I get it? Well, one way is digitally. We've put a package of Catholic Answers magazine together so you can get past years for less than $10 a year. You can get all 8 years for less than $40. And you can get all the ebooks and magazines that are available digitally at great savings right now at shop.catholic.com. We're doing tips for defending the faith.
We have done trips for defending the faith. We had a cruise lined up and everything this summer.
Yeah, we didn't get to take that trip.
And pilgrimages, but no. Maybe one day in the future.
No, I left the whole thing for the cruise. We were going to cruise in Europe and see many of the great medieval churches of Europe. While we did a lot of great Catholic Answers talks and dinners and all that kind of stuff. But I just left it on my calendar, even though we're not going, because I want to make myself feel bad every day.
Every day to look at it.
Every time I look at it, I'm not there. I'm not there. Still not there. Isn't that sad? My kids would say first world problems. Marie, right here in California, watching on YouTube Live, you are next, Marie. Your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Oh my gosh, you're so clear. I love your phone. Yes, go ahead with your question.
Thank you. So it's a little story, little question. I actually am a social science major, and I had a teacher when religion was brought up, and he knew that I was Catholic, actually derailed the entire conversation, and it actually went towards talking about how much he hates Catholics and everything wrong with our faith. And I know as a social science major that might be brought up again. I was just wondering, how can I go about, if it does happen again, how can I defend myself? Because my teacher literally went one by one and asked people why they're not Catholic, and it was a total blitzkrieg on my faith.
Marie, what is the specific course? It's a social science course?
It was sociology intro.
Yeah,
and this school is a public, like a state-funded school?
It's a community college. Since then, I did transfer to an actual Catholic college in the Bay Area. But I do have to return and take another social science class in this
Sure,
that's just abusive, though, Marie. I got to just tell you, that's just abusive.
It is, and it's not uncommon, Marie. I've been in situations like these before where professors know that when I was in my undergrad at Arizona State University, this would happen to me. Professor knew that I was Catholic, and they would slyly bring up something in the lecture, not as overt and abusive as you describe. But they would bring up stuff like this and look over at me to try to get under my skin. Though once I did speak back, and it actually shut down the professor pretty quickly. It was for a cultural psychology class, and we were talking about stereotypes. And so we watched a whole documentary about stereotypes and why they're wrong and they're hateful and they oppress afflicted groups. And then we were having our group discussion. And the teacher, someone made a joke about, they said something and it related to child abuse. And there, so it was a joke. And then the teacher chimed in, "Oh, yeah, unless you're a Catholic priest." And then I slowly raised my hand and I said, "Professor, saying Catholic priests in general are pedophiles, isn't that one of the hateful stereotypes that you said we shouldn't promote in this class?" And then she was just completely undercut by that and had to quickly change the subject. But Marie, here would be my advice for you and others who are in especially university settings where you are, you're trying to live out your faith on campus and you might have a teacher who's abusive. First, you have to understand that in a lecture hall with a professor, it's a totally unfair fight. So you should not be expected to engage in debate or try to cross swords with your professor. Your job there is to learn the material and get a good grade so that you can have awesome transcripts and go and get an awesome job and do a lot of awesome work in the world for the Lord. I'm really trapped in a 90s time loop here with the adjective awesome. So to make sure you understand this. When you're in class, your job is not to be the Catholic debater. If you want to, that's fine. But I will let you know it's a totally unfair fight because the professor sets the rules for the discussion. He can speak at leisure. You can't. He can rally people against you. He already has authority and people look up to him in class. So it's just not a fair competition to try to debate a professor in class. And he has power over you in the form of your grades, especially if it is something like a sociology class. Like if it's a math class, your teacher is going to have a hard time giving you a bad grade when you can clearly prove you got the right answer on a test. But if you're submitting research papers and things that are subjective, if your teacher doesn't like you, it's easier for them to give you a bad grade and to justify it because it's subjective. So my first rule for you, Marie, and for other people in these situations is don't feel bad if you don't get into like a public debate with this person. In fact, it's probably the smartest decision for you to not do that. Rather, what I would recommend that you do is to take copious notes of what is going on, write down what was said, when it was said. If there are other people in your class that are friendly to you, that you know that you can confide in, share it with them how you feel and get them to agree that they heard the same thing. So you have multiple witnesses. And then what you can do, if you feel like the professor is acting in good faith, but is someone you can relate to, you can approach the professor outside of class and raise your concerns. If you're worried the professor is somebody who may retaliate against you or someone who is a real chip on their shoulder, then you should go to the chair of the department or go to student services and report like academic bias and say, look, and here's the rule you can say to yourself to know if you're a victim of academic bias. Ask yourself this question. Would the professor have said the same? Take out Catholic and put in Jewish or Muslim. Like imagine, Marie, if your professor, do you think your professor would have gone to every student and said, why aren't you a Muslim? Do you think he would have honestly done that ever?
Do you know what was so ironic was he is not Muslim himself. He said he was raised Baptist, but he was saying that he would ally himself with those who are Muslim and those who are Buddhist.
Aligning himself?
Rather be that than Catholic.
That's so funny. But notice the double standard there. If a professor went around and asked all the students in their class, why aren't you a Muslim? Like, isn't Islam so bad? If that professor were not tenured, that professor would lose his job. It would be a national scandal. But you would say if they would be censured for saying something about Judaism or Islam or a non-Christian religion, they should be censured for that same behavior if you just swap out the word Islam or Muslim and put in Catholic or Christian. So I would recommend in these cases, Marie, just to, if it's an abusive situation, take copious notes, get other witnesses, and then go to the administration. And also, before you go to the administration, honestly, I would get some help first, because the administration is going to be on the professor's side at a state school. Contact someone like the Alliance for Defending Freedom or the Thomas More Society. Plenty of Christian and Catholic legal groups who will help you to make sure you're not a victim of bias in a university classroom. So that's a recommendation I'd give there. Now, if it's more of just the professor gently challenges beliefs and does so in a non-abusive way, then you can use the classroom as an opportunity to defend Catholic teaching. Like if you can give a speech on abortion or assisted suicide, and if you pick a topic you can defend with secular arguments, then you can make the Catholic perspective, but using these kinds of secular arguments. Or let's say it's sociology. You could write a paper with copious documentation showing that divorce is bad for the family, which is something sociologists may not fully accept, but there's tons of sociological data for. So I find whatever class it is, that if you can use the class to defend Catholic teaching with resources the professor will agree with, great opportunity. But if they're abusive, take notes, go get legal help from a Catholic or Christian legal group. And the person needs to be held accountable so they don't inflict this kind of harm on other students. Is that a helpful response?
Yeah, thank you so much. I felt so bad because I found out, because the class was so large, that there was another person in from my diocese.
Yeah.
And who I worked with before. And I found out, she told me that she went home and cried really bad because of what he was doing. So thank you. I feel like we can finally get justice for both of us.
I think you should. Much. If you can still report it, go right on and do it with multiple witnesses. I say this person, I especially, Marie, and if they're a sociologist who's willing to defend a claim like abortion or so-called same-sex marriage, I'll go to the school and I'll debate them, because I absolutely cannot stand these academic bullies. These are people who...
Yeah, that's bullying.
They are academic bullies because they got a bunch of undergrads and they got their PhD, which all a PhD means is that you spent a long time writing a term paper. I'm sorry. So people will flaunt that around as if they are the expert of everything on God's green earth. They're an expert maybe in a very narrow subject, but then they use their PhD to try to pronounce on subjects they know, frankly, nothing about, including like our faith often. And they'll make students feel bad by just clubbing them over the head with what they've learned in their grad school program. So, and it's hard with these undergrads who can't fight back. I want to say, pick on somebody your own size. You want to debate Catholicism. You have power over them. Yeah, and you have power.
They need to get their degree.
Yeah, it's an unfair situation. The same reason that professors are not allowed to date students, they should not be allowed to debate students. I got to write that on down, because there's a power imbalance there. I got to write that down. You should be respectful of that. Now, I would be willing, if a student organization invited me to go in, debate a professor on Catholicism, then it's a fair fight. And I have debated professors on numerous campuses across this country. And it's a lot different when they are in the neutral setting on debate podiums instead of in the lecture hall in their classroom. I find they act a lot differently. They lose the bravado because now somebody can challenge them.
I don't. All of that I hope is helpful, Maria. I think sometimes people think that they should have the silver bullet answer. You know, the clever comeback that's just going to, I don't know, summarize the Christian faith or something in a way that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just not there.
There's one thing you can do in that situation with a professor who's making outlandish claims about the Catholic faith. You could just raise your hand and say, "Professor, that's really interesting. Can you give me a source for that so I can look into it more closely? Or where is that found?" And so there, what's great is you're just the student asking for a little sort of documentation. And then if the professor was just spouting stuff at the top of their head, they may become flustered that your only challenge there is you're just asking them, can you substantiate that?
Right.
And then so that's one easy way to try to go back. But you're right, Cy, don't get into a debate because it's not a fair fight.
And if you're a professor in a public school that's being paid for by the taxpayer, you don't have a right to be a bigot. Maybe you don't recognize it as bigotry.
Well, because what they'll say is it's fair game. They'll just say it's fair game against this group. And that's sad, but that's really how they think. So I would just say for them and students, take out the word Catholic, put in Jew or Muslim.
Yeah.
And if it would sound bad, it is bad.
Yeah. I hate to say this, though, Trent. I think that there are a lot of universities today where you could put in the word Jew and Jewish, and no one would bat an eye.
You're right, because there's a lot of universities who are aligned with radical elements in the student union that are very anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. So, but oftentimes that's one element. But I find that Islam or Muslim, even in this example, it would just be saying anything that is critical of Islam would be considered a hate
crime.
Well,
Islamophobic is a word. You never hear someone say Christophobic.
Yeah, you never say Christophobic, but Islamophobia is a real word. And it's just funny to me.
That'd be funny to say to a professor, though, I'm so sorry you have Christophobia.
Christophobia. it's just amazing to me that Islamophobia is rooted a little bit in racism. Because it's like, if you're critical of Islam, you're critical of quote-unquote brown people. Newsflash, a lot of people from the Middle East are not Muslim, they're Christian, and most people who are Muslim are not from the Middle East, they're from like Malaysia or Southeast Asia.
Indonesia, hey, you gave us a great opportunity to discuss. I'm sorry you had to suffer in that way, but on the other hand, there's great glory in suffering for the name of the Lord. We'll be right back.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
Who or what is God? Does the universe provide clues to God's existence? Why would a loving, all-powerful God permit suffering in the world? In 20 Answers God, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, all while it guides you down a path of rational inquiry and understanding towards an encounter with the central mystery of the universe. 20 Answers God is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Are your friends or family discouraging you from becoming Catholic?
We can help on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, Carlo Broussard will be here this hour. We're talking with Trent Horn, and if you have you'd like a tip for defending the faith, there's some aspect of the faith you need help defending, whether it's God, the existence of God, the love of God, maybe it's defending Jesus as God himself, maybe it's defending the Bible, defending the sacraments, defending the Pope. If you got something you need help defending, 888-318-7884 is the number. We're also all on pins and needles here on standby because we're about to pass, we think, as long as about 50 more people subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're about to pass 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is a big deal. The fewer than 1,000 nonprofits thus far have crossed the 100,000 line. So we are in we're in the stratosphere. We're in very thin air where we are if we cross that 100,000 mark. And so we're going to celebrate when we do. But in the meantime, we'll continue to keep going to callers, 888-318-7884. Let's go to Dolores in North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Dolores, your question for Trent Horn.
I was trying to look for some other
I live in an area with predominantly Lutheran and non-denominational Christians, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of pushback about Mary, and the constant answer I get mostly from, especially from the non-denominational churches, is that when I say that Mary is, that I pray for Mary to intercess on our behalf, and they jump on me and say that, well, no, it's only in the Bible that Christ is our intercessor. And I said, no, Christ is our mediator. Mary and the saints can intercess on our behalf. And then it's not in the Bible, and I'm just like, okay.
Well, if you ask them to pray for you, so while you consider that, would they pray for you while you consider it? Like, why don't you pray for me while I consider your vineyard? Would they do it?
Hello?
Oh, all right, Dolores. Dolores didn't hear what I said. All right, go ahead.
Dolores, to piggyback off the point that Cy made, I find it's helpful in these conversations to ask people what they mean. So, yeah, when you put down terms like mediator and intercessor, we have to ask, well, what do you mean by that word? So if you ask them, you know, what does it mean to intercede for someone? What would they say, or what would you say the answer to that is?
Well, to me, intercessor means somebody that will speak on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, a mediator would be somebody who would try to more like a negotiate, or not negotiate, but to help find a path.
Right. So a mediator brings two parties together, and one who intercedes advocates on behalf of one party to another party. So they're actually intertwined in many respects. And so, for example, when we talk about Mary, she has a role in mediating, so to speak, God and man, because she brings God and man together in her very womb. So we can speak of Mary loosely as a mediator in that sense, though our mediator of the new covenant, who brings humanity in reconciliation to God, of course, is Jesus Christ. He is the one mediator of that covenant because he is God made man. He is fully God and fully man, the only one who can be the true mediator for that. But that doesn't mean we can't also participate in that, in bringing people closer to God. So I think to go off of what Cy said earlier, Dolores, the best way when people say, why would you ask Mary to pray for you? You should only just pray to Jesus, is to ask them, well, look, do you ask other people in your life to pray for you? And it's so funny, Dolores, because for many Protestant Christians, you don't give a second thought to it. Well, of course we ask other people to pray for us. But why would you do that if you have access to God right now? You have access to him right now. Why would you ask anybody for help if you can go directly to God in prayer? And I'm sure any reason they give that would justify it, well, because it's good for the body of Christ as a whole, it's good to bring all of us together, it would also reflect upon the saints who are in heaven. But you could add the extra element. You could ask them this: are the prayers of some people more powerful than other people? Now, not everyone believes that. Some people think all prayers are equal, but God is not egalitarian. When you look in Scripture, like in James 5:16, it says the prayers of a righteous person are very powerful. If you go back to the book of Job, at the very end of the book of Job, God is angry at Job's friends who are spouting off nonsense about him and Job. And he told Job's friends, you go get Job to pray for you. I'll hear his prayers, not yours. So the prayers of a righteous person are powerful. Hebrews 12:23 says of the saints in heaven that they are the spirits of just men made perfect. So if you have someone who is righteous in heaven, who is perfected from sin, then their prayers are very, very powerful. So I think I might just go along that path. And then also, you were right to bring up that the objection, it's not in the Bible. Well, that's not a great objection because it assumes sola scriptura is true. And you can bring up other points like, well, where does the Bible say that you should pray to the Holy Spirit, or pray to the or confess your sins to the risen Jesus? It doesn't say that there either. So sola scriptura can be kind of confining for Christians. So I would recommend, Dolores, I would like to send you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic, that covers Mary and praying to the saints. And then you may be able to forward the copy on to some of your friends or get a copy for them. So if you stay on the line, I would like to get you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic. I think it would be very helpful for you. Do you have any other questions?
Order that, because I was... Nope. That was it. It just kind of caught me off guard the last time that one of these church people confronted me.
Sure.
Because I have an uncle who left the Catholic Church and is a non-denominational minister, and he's never attacked our standing on Mary.
Hmm.
I mean, he was raised Catholic and everything, but he's never, ever, I mean, even in his own church, when I send to his own church, he never, ever said anything against Mary.
That's so good. Good. God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him. And it is true that among Protestant Christians, there's a great diversity of views.
There are some who are almost afraid of Mary because they believe that any kind of veneration of Mary is Mariolatry, like the illicit worship of Mary.
Right.
And there are some who are very friendly to Mary, some Protestants who are very amenable to the Blessed Virgin, the Protestant reformers, actually. So I cover this more in my book, The Case for Catholicism, Dolores. You can feel free to pick that up at your leisure. In the chapter on Mary, I cite people like Martin Luther, John Calvin, who either refute arguments against Mary, like against her perpetual virginity, or praise her. Luther had very effusive praise for the Blessed Virgin, which was very common at the time of the Reformation. This kind of more anti-Marian stance is more kind of something we see in modern Protestantism. It's not as common among the reformers themselves.
888-318-7884 is the number. We are within just three or four subscriptions of 100. Oh, we're within seven. We're within seven subscriptions of 100,000 subscriptions on our YouTube channel.
I want a good sound effect.
And we're hoping, I see Carlos here, and I know that Trent would like it to happen his hour and not Carlos' hour, so he gets to celebrate and drink the champagne with me.
Go down in history.
So, yeah, you go down in history as the guy who was here when it happened. I think we'll probably take a break and we'll come back and we'll see if we cross that 100,000 line. I do want to let you know, we've been doing a lot of podcasting. Trent does extraordinary podcasting on his The Council of Trent podcast. And he's got a discussion up there now about investigating Norma McCorvey's deathbed confession, which has gotten so much press and so much confused press, and not always confused, I think, for innocent reasons, but Trent covers that.
Mm-hmm.
He also talks about faith, reason, and the Waco siege. And he does that with Jimmy Akin. And I watched the Waco movie on EWTN or series on EWTN, and I'm still not over it. So I got to get your podcast on that. Over at Catholic Answers Focus, which is only it's only a little bit better than Trent's podcast, wouldn't you say? I mean, Trent's is almost as good as ours, wouldn't you say, Nick? And we have Why is Marriage a Sacrament over there, where we talk with Father Hugh about natural marriage and sacramental marriage, and why are Catholics upset about what happens with natural marriage? Why do we even worry about that? Well, there's a reason why we are concerned about natural marriage as well as sacramental marriage. And then Carlos got a great I did a conversation with Carlo, and he just covered he's doing a beautiful job on some objections to the Catholic faith that are based in kind of attacks on what Jesus meant in founding the church and in making Peter the rock and all that. So there's one where Paul rebukes Peter. And so we did a conversation about, does that rebuke where Paul rebukes Peter, does that suggest that Peter was maybe less important than we Catholics suggest? All that's over at Catholic Answers Focus, that you can get at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, this Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Ladies and gentlemen and creatures of the earth, I have an announcement to make. Catholic Answers now has more than 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. Wow, that is a lot of great applause. Thank you to our studio audience for that great reaction. You know what? Here, we'll celebrate. Time to celebrate.
Sai has just cracked open a Diet Pepsi.
Oh, you weren't supposed to tell him what it was. thanks everybody who's subscribed on YouTube. Thank you to everybody who supports us here.
What in their imaginations, it's clearly a pop top. What did you think they would imagine? Champagne in an aluminum can.
I thought maybe you stay ribbon or something.
You stay classy, San Diego. Yes. You stay classy.
I feel so happy. Thank you everybody who has done that. On to a million now. It's just growing and growing because of the great work of people like our own Trent Horn sitting right here next to me, and Carlo Broussard, who will be in here shortly and is on the other side of the glass. But a special thanks to everybody in the social media and video departments, all of whom are celebrating right now and not paying any attention to me, for a great job, because sharing the truth about Jesus Christ, about the love of God given to the world in Jesus Christ, and about the Catholic Church as the sacrament of encounter with Jesus Christ is more important than any other message that can be shared. And now we're sharing it with more than 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. That doesn't even count all the people on Twitchy or Facebook or whatnot, all that. But we'll talk about all you another day. Today is a YouTube celebration. So you happy, Trent?
I am happy.
You should be.
I'm happy, and I know it.
I stomped my foot. You clapped your hands. All right, tips for defending the faith. Let's go back to doing what we do here. Juan in Colombia, watching on YouTube Live. Look at that. Right back to a YouTuber. Juan, you are YouTube-astic. No, that's I couldn't get anything out of that. Sorry.
YouTubular.
You are YouTubular, Juan. Go ahead with your question.
Can you hear me?
Did you faint, Juan? Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, first of all, I just want to thank Trent Horn for all his amazing podcasts. I've listened to them. They're wonderful. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. How can I be of service?
My question is... I was recently reading about a movie director called Christopher Nolan, and the article praised him for his material, because everything in his movies is scientific and all those things. So that got me thinking about materialism, because these people seem to think that it is unreasonable to propose supernatural entities to explain natural phenomena. Mm-hmm. Like the existence of the world and things like that. So I was wondering, what are some arguments against materialism?
Okay, there's just a slight delay, so we won't be able to really do conversation.
Yeah, so Juan,
for materialism.
Let me give you my thoughts on this. First, it's important for us to distinguish materialism from atheism and naturalism. So sometimes people equate them, but they're not synonymous. So atheism and naturalism are pretty close. There are differences there, but for the purpose of our conversation, naturalism would be the view that only the natural world exists and the supernatural does not exist. So God does not exist. I mean, naturalism and atheism are basically the same thing. There are differences, but naturalism is a view there's only nature and the supernatural does not exist. Materialism, however, takes a bit further and says the only things that exist are the material. Now, there are some naturalists, people who don't believe in God or the supernatural, who do believe that there are immaterial things that exist. So examples of this would be Platonists when it comes to mathematics, who think that numbers and sets really do exist. Mathematical equations describe not numerals on a piece of paper, but that the numbers themselves exist in kind of a timeless, immaterial way. Minds exist, moral truths exist. So there are naturalists who are not materialists, who would say, for example, that the mind either is completely immaterial or it depends on the brain, but it's immaterial and it emerges from the brain in some way. So materialism is a stricter subset under naturalism. So you could have someone who doesn't believe in God, but who also rejects materialism. But people who are materialists also don't believe in God because they think the only things that exist are things that are made of matter. So how could you argue against materialism? Well, there's a few ways you could go about it. One, you could take an argument for the existence of God, like the contingency argument or the Kalam argument, an argument that shows, hey, there's actually an explanation for all material reality. So if material reality has not always existed, or it's possible material reality could have not existed, if there is an explanation for the material, that explanation itself can't be made of matter, because then it's a part of the thing that needs to be explained. So an argument for the existence of God, like a contingency argument, the Kalam argument says that something has come from nothing, that explains why matter even exists at all, or why matter is organized well, like a design argument, that would be an argument against materialism. You could also make arguments, so you could start with the universe as a whole against materialism, or you could look at the human person. Now, it's funny you bring up Christopher Nolan, people saying, ah, his films are all very materialist. Now, I will say, like, The Dark Knight, for example, that's a very grounded take of Batman. It's not what I do, but who I am that matters. I have to do the Christian Bale voice when I talk about The Dark Knight. That was a more grounded view. But Christopher Nolan does a lot of other things that involve the mind, and it's pretty trippy, and I wouldn't say it's totally materialist. So, for example, Christopher Nolan did that movie Inception a few years ago, where like you could go, inside somebody's dream, for example, and people have these dreamscapes and ideas. A lot of materialists, the Churchlands, Patricia, I forget the name of her husband, it's Paul. Patricia Churchland would be one of these philosophers who says that actually everything is matter. So there's only synapses, only molecules in the mind. So if everything is matter, then you can't have. So they say that thoughts or dreams or our consciousness is actually an illusion because they're strictly with materials. You can't get a bunch of cells in the brain and get images, immaterial images or qualia, as philosophers call it, in our mind. You can't really get that. So they say it's actually an illusion. Alex Rosenberg is another atheist who says our consciousness is an illusion. You can't have that under strict materialism. But if we do have consciousness that emerges, even though that is hard to explain in a purely material framework. Other issues related to free will and being morally responsible beings don't seem to flow well with materialism. So I would recommend a good author that you should look up is Michael Ogros. Michael Ogros has two books. One of these is The Immortal in You, How Human Nature is More Than Science Can Say. And I want to say I'm like 98% certain. No, he did another book called Who Designed the Designer? So there's two books right there to smash materialism. You've got Who Designed the Designer and The Immortal in You, and both of their theses would refute materialism because you have an explanation for why matter exists at all, and you show there are aspects of human behavior like consciousness, our free will, choices that can't be explained on a materialistic framework. So that would be one resource I'd recommend, but that'd be my two-pronged approach for dealing with materialism. Is that helpful?
Oh, yes. Very much. Thank you very much.
All right, Juan, thank you. I know you've been calling every now and then lately, and I really appreciate when you do call. Hope you will call again.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. We don't get a lot of callers from Colombia.
Hey.
I don't know if you know that, but we just don't get a lot of callers.
Well,
from
I think
Colombia.
It would be hard for him to call.
Maybe he's
from
one of our 100,000 YouTube subscribers.
Well, that's
we
what's great
have.
About YouTube Live is we get people all over the world who can watch and participate in the show. Who, if they tried to call us, I mean, that would just be a nightmarish bill for them to be able to do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's nice. They could just pop right on in. And we always give preference to our international callers. Always
when I remember to.
When you remember.
Yeah, I hate to say that, but I sometimes leave them waiting. Joyce in Iowa. That's in America, right? That's not international.
Yeah.
Listening to EWTN.
Iowa? Iowa?
Are you trying to turn it into like a Hebrew word? That's what it sounds like you're doing.
Right.
How can I? Oh, no. Joyce in Iowa listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are next up with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Okay. First off, congratulations on 100,000 subscribers.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
How can we secondly,
help?
You put an earworm, that last call put an earworm in my ear. Now I've got a tune running through my head. Nothing comes from nothing. Anyway, whatever.
From the Von Trapps, right? Sound of Music.
You caught it too. Sound of Music.
That's right. So, well, how can we help you then?
How does a convert deal with, or any Catholic for that matter, deal with Protestants who want to hammer objections and not really listen to the answers?
By remembering, we can sometimes do that too when we're very excited. and also just being, it takes a lot of time and patience and prayer to learn to be gracious with people. And not everyone does this, but some people have this personality trait. The Christian apologist Greg Kokel calls them steamrollers. So they're somebody who, when they engage you on a subject, they want to win the argument. And so they just fire as many questions and arguments at you as quickly as they can. It's kind of a shotgun approach. So it's like, if you fail to answer even one of them, that means they win. So if they just keep hammering you with questions, then you kind of get overwhelmed. Or what sometimes happens with this approach with steamrolling, someone will ask you a question, you answer it, and then they jump to another side issue because they feel pinned down by that by this line of questioning, so they quickly change subjects. I call that lily padding. It's like a frog sits on a lily pad and it starts to sink. They jump to another lily pad so they can stay afloat. And people do this when you get questions, and they'll just change the subject and throw more questions at you. So they can stay afloat in the argument. Is that kind of what you're referring to, Joyce?
That's the kind of thing that I'm referring to. They don't really want to hear the answer, or it doesn't suit them, or it's like they want to overwhelm you.
Mm-hmm. Does this happen in conversations with more than one person involved, or the internet, or do you know someone where this is something that they do one-on-one,
Well, for instance, usually it's one-on-one, but occasionally it'll be like in a group setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can happen because people are nervous in the presence of other people, or on the internet, people can get a little bit more cantankerous. So I usually recommend things being one-on-one. If it is even one-on-one in person, some people can be insufferable in person and they're just in debate mode. So there's a few different approaches you can take with a steamroller. One strategy is to let the steamroller run out of steam, let them talk and talk and talk, and you're just quiet. And they say, well, what do you think? What do you think? Well, I am thinking. Let me think about this for a minute. And so once they've run out of steam, then you can just kind of give a brief reply. Another thing you can do is to gently ask the person to say, well, those are interesting subjects, but I want to focus just on this. We can talk about those other things at another time if you want. Also, this person may have the propensity to want to win debates in the moment, so maybe talking to them one-on-one may not be as helpful if they can't click to visual and verbal cues in a conversation that they're kind of being rude. So you might say, why don't you write down some of your questions and I could go get you some answers and maybe email them to you. And this may be somebody that a written correspondence may be better because they don't have to feel like they have to rapid fire back at you in a conversation. You can have more of a written exchange on things, and you can keep things a little bit more focused. Also, it's important for you in these conversations, if you want to maintain it with a dialogue, to turn the tables and to ask them questions about what they believe and get them to defend their point of view. This happens to me all the time on the show. Like if we'll talk about abortion, people say to me, what about this? What about that? What about rape? What about overpopulation? And I'll say, can I ask you a question? What is a person? What is a person? Why don't you think the unborn are persons? So when you ask questions, that can be helpful. For more resources on this, Joyce, I'd recommend Greg Kokel's book, Tactics. Also, my audio MP3, A Beginner's Guide to Defending the Faith, available at shop.catholic.com, may be helpful for you.
Trent Horn, thanks very much.
No problem, Si.
By the way, if you want to find Trent's podcast, probably the easiest way to do it is just go to TrentHornPodcast.com. TrentHornPodcast.com. Coming up next, Carlo Broussard. What are we talking about, Carlo? I forgot. Yeah. We're talking about
religion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Religion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you care about religion?
Why don't you
need to care
about
more about religion.
Yes, if you don't care about religion and you're like, why do these guys care about this so much? Next hour, perfect for you. It's your opportunity to call up. Talk to Carlo Broussard. We'll be right back to do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.